Our next speaker is Kim Cardbo. She is President and CEO of Women of Hope International.
Thank you. Good morning. Thanks for inviting me. I'm going to take a slightly different approach, but very similar to the first two. What we want to look at is the multifaceted approach to Ebola, that it's, as has been mentioned already, much more than just a virus or just a disease or just a healthcare crisis. But certainly, it is a healthcare crisis, and it's definitely a public health crisis. Have you ever known anyone or had maybe a relative, a friend, someone you loved who just every time you turn around, something bad's happening to them? Like, you're just like, really? Them again? Why? So I have lived and worked in Sierra Leone since I was 9. That was just a few years ago. And that's kind of how it feels like to me in Sierra Leone right now. Sierra Leone has been one of those kind of places where just one thing after another happens. You've got underdevelopment, you have a war, you have corruption, you have leadership issues and poor education, and now Ebola on top of that. I have long been saying since the Ebola outbreak started months ago that Ebola is not actually the problem in West Africa right now, that Ebola is actually only revealing the problems in West Africa right now. When people in America, this is sort of one of my pet peeves, get really ticky about, oh my gosh, what if Ebola comes here and we have the same kind of outbreak here? Not happening. To compare the situation in America with an Ebola crisis and the situation in West Africa with the Ebola crisis is not even like comparing apples and bananas. It's more like comparing apples and rocks. Because our systems are so different, the underpinnings are so different that it's just not going to be the same thing, which we've seen already, but yet people are continuing to be fearful of that type of situation taking place. It's just not going to happen. It's not possible. Ebola, as Ebola has to be revealed by something else, Ebola is also a revealer of other things, and it really has brought to light a lot of the underlying issues that have created what has been called the perfect storm in Sierra Leone, Guinea, and Liberia to create an epidemic that took off like wildfire at a rate that people were not expecting. And so we're just going to take a look at just a few of those underlying issues to see how those fit together, and then I'm going to give you a case study that'll demonstrate some of those for you. One, inadequate healthcare facilities and public health systems. You know, for containment of the virus itself, there are really four keys to that happening. One is early diagnosis, one is early treatment, effective contact tracing, and safe burial. Three of those four issues really are public health. Maybe all four could be considered public health issues and are a result of inadequate healthcare systems. You've got corruption. I've been on the field several times since the Ebola epidemic started. We have staff on the field all the time. I would challenge somebody in the powers that be to ask for an accounting of the billions and billions of dollars that have been pumped into West Africa so far, because you're not seeing it on the ground when you're there. You have broken educational systems, and that includes health education. So as has already been mentioned, just the understanding of how disease is transmitted and passed is so much different in West Africa than what it is in our own settings. And that inconsistent messaging has also made issues worse, because the messages keep changing and people have become confused. There's also, in West Africa, in Sierra Leone particularly, when education is done, there's a lot of teaching what, but not so much why. And so one of an examples of that is at the beginning of the onset of this epidemic, there was a rule passed, the ABC rule, avoid body contact. And so everyone just stopped body contact of any kind, no touching, no handshakes, no anything. Not to say that that's necessarily a bad thing, but the reason why I'm using this as an example is that there was not any indication to people as to why we're going to do that, just what. And so when I was there in August, asked a focus group of women, how is the virus spread from one person to another? How could you possibly get this virus from someone else who had it? And they said unanimously, if we touch people, we get sick. And I said, so if I touch this person right here, I'm not sick, she's not sick, which of us is going to get sick? And you could just see the wheels spinning, like, that doesn't make sense, but that is what we've been told. And so there was confusion in that, because the why was not told, just the what. Insufficient Infrastructure is also an issue, and that's an issue in the healthcare system as well, with lack of treatment centers, lack of ambulances, lack of adequate communication systems. There's a lack of social support systems for people, and people fall through the cracks. Poor hygiene and sanitation. Again, another one of the sort of extreme measures that was not balanced with a Y. Ubiquitous chlorine buckets, everywhere chlorine buckets in Sierra Leone right now, and infrared thermometers. An example, I was going into a telephone office and was stopped at the door and said, just a minute, you have to have your temperature taken. I was with a colleague. Mine was 36. Hers was 34. He said, you're fine. Go on in. I said, well, I'm fine, but she's dead. So why are we going inside? This is the problem. And then they said, well, stop and wash your, you're fine. Go ahead. It's fine, really. You're not 38, so it's all good. So stop and wash your hands with the chlorine. So I said, okay, I want you to watch something. I'm going to wash my hands with this chlorine. And now I'm going to touch this filthy, dirty handle on your door and go inside. Who knows what I'm picking up before I actually walk inside the office. So again, looking at what's and not why's, and just a lot of poor hygiene and sanitation. Another thing, after everybody started washing their hands with chlorine, another thing that was not happening, though, was addressing the frequent urination and spitting all over the streets. Seems like that might be a problem with the body fluid transmission. And worldview issues, which has already been addressed to a large degree and in a variety of different ways and means. But when the virus first started first hit Sierra Leone back in May, June, the CDC began releasing educational materials. And as I looked at that, because our organization's sort of specialty is community education with low literacy populations, and particularly using appropriate methods and also looking at underlying and worldview issues that go into that, I noticed that all of those materials really were coming from a Western medical model. And that was, I knew, going to be a problem in actually being able to teach people what they needed to hear and get them to comply with that education. And so we began developing all new materials using storytelling methods, which are very common in West Africa, allow people to really wrestle through the issues and come to conclusions themselves, and also addressing some of those underlying worldview issues that were at play in the spread of the virus. Some of those materials I have with me, and there's also some at the CCIH booth in the vendor hall as well. All right, I'm going to quickly tell you a story about Sally. Sally Matu had not had an easy life. During this devastating and vile civil war that ravaged her country during her teens, rebels overran her village. Sally was not one of the fortunate ones who escaped their horrors. Rebel axes severed both of her legs below the knees. By some miracle, Sally survived this atrocity, and though she eventually healed physically, the scars remained on both her legs and her heart. There were a couple of men in her life over the years, but they left her with little else besides three children, whom she struggled to raise alone. Sally was resilient, however, and she found comfort in her faith, and her passion was singing and songwriting. Her life's dream was to record a gospel album. Sally learned to tie-dye cloth to sell, and she also learned to sew. She sold small items to earn food money each day and eventually found a more secure relationship with a man who had also lost his leg to a rebel, and together they had two more children. Sally is a feisty woman with a keen sense of humor and a flair for the dramatic. She never went very far in school but wanted better for her children. An NGO gave her a home after the war in a settlement for amputees and war-wounded individuals where she found community and belonging. Ebola hit their little settlement, however, about 3 miles outside of the small city in the center of Sierra Leone, when one of the women fell ill. She traveled to see relatives, and several days after she came home, became sick. People suspected it was Ebola, but the public transportation systems had been banned, so there were very few options for transporting the sick woman to care, and there was no Ebola treatment center within 6 hours anyway. The women in the settlement did their best to care for the woman, but she did die. Sally had just had a baby, so she didn't help care for the woman, but her mother, who lived with her, did. They dutifully washed the woman's body upon her death and gave her a fitting burial outside the village. A couple weeks later, Sally's mother and her 12-year-old daughter became ill. They managed to get to the holding center in the city, but nothing was done for patients in a holding center anyway. No food is provided, no IVs are hung, no medications are given. Sally, too, fell sick and joined them there a few days later, along with her 14-year-old daughter, Aminata. The two-week-old baby was left in the village in the care of a friend. Sally's mother soon died, followed by her 12-year-old daughter the next day. By this time, Sally was so ill, they didn't even tell her of her daughter's death. Her husband, Jibril, came to the holding center where Sally was, but nothing was being done for her. She complained of a lot of pain and of being very thirsty. He tried to go out and buy her some medicines, but the nurse at the holding center wouldn't give them to her. An advocate asked from our organization if we could provide IV fluids to replace some of the fluids she was losing in large amounts. They were told that all modalities were put in place for patients at the holding centers, and that was not necessary. But despite the claim of adequate modalities, Sally continued to worsen, and nothing was being done. Aminata, 14 years old, lay in the bed next to her mother, watching her mother waste away. 2 weeks ago, Sally lost the battle with her enemy, Ebola. Aminata weakened herself, called the village to tell her family and relatives that Sally had died, but no one could come to her to comfort her. She lay next to the body of her mother for 24 hours until the body was finally taken away. Meanwhile, in the village, the family was under quarantine. Our staff knew that the likelihood of the baby becoming positive was extremely high, given that he was nursing when his mother got sick. So we had to make a difficult decision what to tell the family. We knew that if we told them how likely it was that the baby was going to be infected, the chances were very high they would leave the baby in the bush to die. But we didn't want them to put themselves at risk in caring for the baby either. So we chose not to tell them how high the likelihood was, but to encourage them to use gloves and disposable diapers for the baby, which we provided for them. Aminata was still lying in the holding center with very little care. We continued to provide her with phone credit so she could call when she needed to talk to someone, and one of our staff called her every night. We provided her with reading material and water and food to eat and drink. She was terrified, grieving, and depressed. She had lost her grandmother, sister, and mother in the span of 1 week and felt that she was also going to soon die. Jibril, Sally's husband, became so depressed he climbed to the top of a mango tree and was unable to be convinced to come down for comfort. When one of our staff visited the family's home, they discovered that the family was not able to eat, not only because they didn't have food, but also because they could not start a fire because no one would lend them an axe to split the wood. A load of food and supplies, including coal, phone credit, diapers, and baby formula, was dropped off at the family's home to help them through the quarantine. Last week, Aminata was declared an Ebola survivor. She's still not strong enough to be released, and her blood tests have not yet come back negative, though they were taken days ago. Last time her blood and her mother's blood was sent out for testing, it took over a week to come back, arriving 2 days after her mother's death. She has a long road ahead of her in physical and emotional recovery, and the stigma that she will face upon release is going to be unbearable. Schools have been shut down indefinitely in Sierra Leone, and she has no mother now to go home to. Aminata has become one of the estimated 20,000 orphans of Ebola in Sierra Leone. Can you see all the multiple layers of problems that are contributing to the problem of Ebola? So what do we do? Ebola requires out-of-the-box thinking. What's ideal is out and creative is in. And it's also an all-hands-on-deck situation. So I would ask the question, what do you have to offer? I think everyone has something to offer. Everything's broken, so everybody has something that they can do to offer some help. Zig Ziglar has two definitions of fear. One is forget everything and run. And in many cases, that's what we're seeing people's reaction being right now in regards to the Ebola virus, particularly people in America. He has another definition, however, face everything and rise. And that's what I would challenge health and social service and development professionals of all ilks to be their response to this particular epidemic. The needs are huge. You've got food security issues, community health education, both in prevention as well as dealing with some of the recovery issues, orphan care for the over 20,000 orphans just in Sierra Leone alone, educational gaps of children who've been out of school for over a year. When you put bored children and bored adults who've lost their jobs in homes together and that they can't leave for a very long period of time, you have a lot of bad things that take place. So there's a lot of repercussions that are coming out of that as well. There's a lot of emotional care needed, both in grief and loss, as well as societal change. Addressing and recreating the traditional practices, which we've already talked about this morning. Economic collapse and need for business infusion back into the country. Isolation and reintegration and the stigma that goes along with it, and spiritual care. Maybe none of those are your skill set, and you don't really see a place where you could fit in or don't want to be directly involved or can't. And so I would say to you that you too can still be involved. You can give. There are lots of organizations on the ground working in the various challenges that you could be involved in. You can't fix the whole of the Ebola problem, but you can impact one facet of that problem. And if you need some ideas on how to do that, please contact me, and I've got some information over here. I'd be happy to plug you into some places that you can do that. Thank you. Thank you.